We're talking this morning here with Vic Cooley. He was the lead increment scientist for Expeditions 33 and 34. Vic, appreciate hanging with us as we've waited to find out when this is going to happen. Let's start by getting you to explain what this small satellite deployer demonstration is all about.
Well, thank you, Pat. Good morning to you. Yes, it's a pretty exciting day to be here in the flight control room. The demonstration of the SmallSat deployment system is all about adding yet one more capability to our wonderful space station. You know, the SmallSat, or otherwise known as CubeSat, that design was actually engineered by Cal Poly back in 1999, and it included a deployer. Now, JAXA has modified that slightly and has launched it to the space station on the HTV vehicle earlier this summer, and now there are five satellites there. And they will be ejected when we get to this activity, which is now probably postponed because of the ATV situation and the dam. But it is to demonstrate that capability from a permanently manned orbiting vehicle. So far, these satellites have been ejected from non-manned vehicles, which are very expensive to launch. And the whole idea is about lowering cost. If we can lower the cost by these payloads being a secondary payload on a rocket, or in this case, on the HTV, which is already carrying cargo to the space station, then that makes it even lower cost for these small sats to be deployed.
So it's a matter of expense as well as the efficacy of deploying them. You don't have to have a dedicated rocket to launch what's really a small payload.
That's correct. And you know, we want to continue lowering the cost as much as possible. The cost was lowered substantially just by having this design that we've had over the last 10 years, and many small sats have already been launched that way from unmanned vehicles. We would like to have that capability from the space station also. It's possible to conceive that you might want to have satellites ready to go that needed some kind of tweaking or adjustment before you launch them. They could be positioned on the space station, and then that adjustments, mechanical adjustments, could be made by the crew members before they launch them for such dedicated purposes as monitoring disasters or other natural events. I'll talk about some of these satellites later and their monitoring capabilities.
And is that what the crew members have been doing, making those preparations, those adjustments to it?
No, they haven't adjusted any of these satellites. So we're just in the early stages of demonstrating that these satellites can actually be launched from the space station with this Japanese SSOD, the Small Satellite Orbital Deployer.
Okay. We saw a piece of animation here while you were speaking a minute ago that I'm hoping we can get set up to run again, because I want to ask you if you can talk us through the deployment procedure and tell me how the crew and the flight controllers on the ground are going to work to actually set these satellites out into orbit.
Well, first let me talk about the JIM airlock and the JIM remote manipulator system, or JIM RMS. The JIM is the Japanese experiment module. It has an airlock which allows the crew to position in this case, the satellite deployer, in the airlock when it's, and this is connected and open to the pressurized environment. Then they close the hatch behind the satellite deployer, and then they can depressurize that airlock such that now the deployer can slide out into the vacuum of space and be retrieved by the JIM RMS and then positioned for deployment.
So to recap that, the crew members have the satellites inside the station, but they attach it to this slide and through the airlock present it outside so that the Japanese robotic arm can grab it and begin to manipulate, put these out to be deployed.
Yes, and that's it's a choreographed sequence of steps between the ground and Aki Hoshide on the space station. So there's the way it starts out is Aki will position the satellites on the table, and he will then close the hatch such that the satellites are now in the airlock and the hatch is closed on the inside. He will then command the airlock to be depressed, and he will open the hatch on the outside of the airlock, and this is all by commanding. He's not physically doing this himself. And he will then command the table to slide out. And now it's out in the vacuum of space, and the ground will then command the JIM RMS, a remote manipulator system, much like our space station arm, but the space station arm is much bigger. This is a smaller arm just on the gym section, just for handling external payloads. So the ground SIPSE control at the JAXA Control Center in Tsukuba near Tokyo will command the gym arm to grapple the extended slide table with the satellite deployer on it. Aki will then release the lock that holds the multi-purpose experiment platform, or MPAP, onto the slide table, and then the RMS, is now it's being commanded from the ground, it extracts that deployer from the airlock slide table. Now, at this point, Aki retracts the table into the airlock, and the GEM RMS then moves to the deploy position for the satellites. The deploy position is pointed 45 degrees away from nadir and retrograde, such that it won't interfere with the space station after the satellites are released.
What is it that these satellites are going to do? You said there are five satellites. In general, what's the mission of these satellites once they're deployed?
Well, let me talk a little bit about the satellites first. As I mentioned, this satellite design has been a standard for over 10 years now, and they are 10-centimeter cubes weighing no more than 1.2 kilograms, or about 3 pounds. So in this particular case, there are five of these satellites. One of them is actually two of those 10-centimeter cubic units. There are two chutes, or GEM satellite deployers, and three of the 10-centimeter cubes can fit in each chute. The first deployment will be done by Aki. The second deployment will be done by the SIPSE ground control. But in this case, the five satellites consist of all of them, with one exception, were designed and built by students at universities. One of them was built by San Jose State University, and that's called TechEdSat. And it will, need to refer to my notes here, it transmits elapsed time, temperature, voltage, and current, and any error messages that the microprocessor has encountered over a ham radio. All of these satellites have solar panels on them to produce power, and they all transmit signals of some sort, in this case ham radio signals. Another satellite, which is provided by the company called NanoRacks, who in turn goes out and gathers customers who want to launch small satellites. In this case, their customer is a Vietnamese university, and that the students from that university have designed a satellite that will take images of the Earth and possibly capture images of and be able to do ship tracking, detect forest fires, and do atmospheric research. The other three satellites were designed by Japanese students or companies, and one of them that is very interesting is the FITSAT. This satellite actually has LEDs on it that flash very brightly, but flashing is the key here because they're not on continuously. They don't consume that much power, but when they are on, they're very bright, so bright that you might be able to see them from ground sites within Japan. They're described as 100 watts of LEDs. Now, a watt is an amount of energy per time unit, so since they're flashing, you really have to take out the time aspect of it. But they're extremely bright, if you know how bright LEDs can be compared to regular light bulbs. The second satellite from the from JAXA, or from the Japanese side, is the one that's actually twice as big as any of the others. It's a two-unit satellite, and it transmits Earth images taken with a fisheye lens. The last satellite from the JAXA side takes infrared pictures of the Earth and transmits those to the ground.
It's all going to be interesting to see when it happens. As we mentioned, the plan was that these satellites were going to be deployed tomorrow morning, possibly about this time. That plan is probably going to change as a result of the ATV not undocking, as well as the planning for a possible conjunction. It's another interesting scientific aspect of what's going on. Very briefly, give me a sense of what we can look forward to in science during Expedition 33 and 34.
Well, in the near term, I noticed you were talking about the SpaceX Dragon vehicle docking soon. There are two experiments coming up on that vehicle. One is called Micro6. This looks at the yeast fungus, also known as the thrush fungus, which people can get in their mouths. It turns out that the yeast fungus is actually present on all of our bodies. It's an opportunistic pathogen. It's just waiting for a chance to flourish when a person's immune system becomes compromised. And we know from other studies that astronauts' immune system, just because they're out of their natural environment and in a microgravity environment, their immune system does become compromised. So there is, you can understand that there would be a very serious health risk, the yeast infections, yeah, in this case. So this experiment actually grows yeast in a microgravity environment and looks at the genetic changes that happen with that yeast growing in a microgravity environment. Another sortie experiment, as we call it, which will go up on the SpaceX vehicle and come down approximately 25 or 30 days later on the same vehicle, looks at plants and their resistance against gravity on the Earth. It turns out this experiment is called Resist Tubule, and the act of resisting the pull of gravity and being able to hold itself up is where the resistance comes from. The tubule refers to structures inside plant cells that give those cells their strength so that they can resist gravity. So there are Earth applications as well as space applications for this experiment. On Earth, a plant can spend up to 50% of the energy it acquires from the sun just resisting gravity. But as we continue to use genetically modified organisms for our food, plants may not need to spend that much energy resisting gravity because they change their shape and so forth, but they still may grow these structures to resist gravity. So if we can control how much energy the plant puts in resisting gravity, we might be able to increase food production for plants on Earth. In space, obviously, for long duration trips, it would be very desirable to be able to, for the astronauts, sure, to grow their own food in space, and that it has space applications also.
That's great. We look forward to seeing all of that. Vic, thanks for coming this morning. Appreciate
You're welcome,
it. Pat. Vic Cooley is the lead increment scientist for Expedition 33 and 34.
Thank you.